damn night.
Welcome back to All Damn Night, the greatest music history podcast in history.
I'm your host,
This is I'm your host, Brandon Richardson. This is our co-host,
Sean Demers.
Sean, good to have you back for another episode.
All right, let's get into it, man.
Let's do this. So what we do on this show is kind of dissect stories from music history, large, small, big in scope, small in detail. So this is we're going to take a little bit of a smaller bite out of a bigger
story. Just like we did last week?
Yeah. Okay. We're taking kind of easing our way into these big stories that are coming up. So, without further ado, Sean, in the year 1947, on January 8th, in the war-torn city of London, England, in the neighborhood of Brixton in South England. I think, man, who knows if I'm pronouncing that right? Like, Brixton?
Brighton. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. Sorry. David Robert Jones was born. The child...
David Robert Jones.
Distinguished name.
Okay.
The child developed an interest in music. He eventually ended up studying art and design before embarking on a professional career.
Sounds like a deadbeat.
Total deadbeat.
Yeah.
He embarked... If you lived in London, that's what you do. Study art and design. All the famous musicians in the 60s.
Yeah.
So he went on
Black
to...
Black Lung.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess it beats in the coal mines.
Yeah.
So he goes on to a professional career as a musician in 1963. And by now, the young man decides that he needs to change his name. So David Jones is a little nautical. Not quite going to work.
So he's not a pirate.
Didn't want to be confused with the pirate.
Okay.
So he decides to change his name to David Bowie.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to stay. We're going to save the whole reasoning behind changing the name to David Bowie for the big David
Man,
Bowie episode.
You hit me hard with that real quick.
We all know that David Bowie passed away in 2016.
Yeah.
Wanted to kind of touch on it. He passed away, this is mid-January as we record this in 2018. He passed away just shy of, or just over 2 years ago. On January 10th, 2016.
Was Dark Star post-mortem?
That was 2 days before his...
Isn't that nuts?
And that his January 8th was when he was born.
Okay.
So he died 2 days after his birthday.
I would love to die on my birthday.
Merle Haggard died on his birthday.
That's a cool guy. I bet we could have a beer together and just have a grand old time.
I don't think you're his type.
You know what? No, you're probably right.
So the young man could hang out
with a Beethoven. I don't know if I could hang out with a Merle Haggard.
You're too highfalutin for Merle Haggard.
No. I was saying more metal rather than country.
I think you'd be lucky to hang out with Merle Haggard.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you have a Ouija board? Can we ask him?
I don't think this podcast is. We don't talk to anyone on the Ouija boards on this podcast. His rise was pretty meteoric. David Jones is old news. David Bowie is the guy that matters. He came along in the 1960s. He had a pretty meteoric rise. He has a big mix of the 1960s were an eclectic mix of everything from
Janis Joplin.
Funk. To
funkadelic, yeah.
Yeah, everything. He kind of took everything and mixed it. He went on in the 70s. He goes to make his big famous character, Ziggy Stardust. Do you mean song or do you mean persona? So, like we said, this is going to be about a real specific slice in David Bowie's life.
Are we covering Pan's Labyrinth or no?
Nope. Sorry.
Oh.
That's going to wait.
I don't know about this. You might just want to tune out till next week, then.
Way to promote this podcast, son. Way to promote. Ziggy Stardust was one of the personalities that David Bowie refers to himself as a collector of personalities.
A collector of personalities.
Yeah, he says that in different interviews, he says that he could take on people's affectations. He could take on their accents, like, while he was talking to them.
Wow.
And he would, whatever he liked about people, he would pick that and kind of cherry pick it, and if he couldn't make that part of his own personality, he would make that part of another personality that he would inhabit. And Ziggy Stardust was really the first of those. I mean, you could say that David Bowie was the first of those because he changed his name to David Bowie.
Right.
But who was original
David Bowie? Was it not? Who's the Tiptoe Through the Tulips guy?
Blanking on that one.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
The, I'm going off like 12 hours of researching and writing.
Okay. You're fresh out of the rabbit hole.
Yeah, definitely. Just popping my head up for a second before we go back into the next one. But Ziggy Stardust was his real kind of first character that he dug into. And as it was a recurring thing with these characters where they would become less character and more actually him.
Oh, like, wow.
They would
be... So, Davy Jones, was he a successful musician?
He changed his name to David Bowie before he had any music success.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So, I think there's another Davy Jones in the Monkees, right?
Yeah.
I think that's why he changed
it. Is it not the Monkees, or is it the Beach Boys?
No, the Monkees.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But don't quote us on any of that. That has nothing to do with the episode. Ziggy Stardust was the kind of first affectation Do you know the backstory to him?
Is it on the same album as Major Tom to Ground Control?
It's the Spiders from Mars album, and he's basically Ziggy. His whole deal was that he became so huge that Bowie wanted to find a way to like kill him off. So he's a fictional androgynous bisexual rock character, which is quite
that a fictitious bisexual rock character wanted to kill off.
The great irony here.
Makes a whole lot of sense.
The character was retained for the subsequent Ziggy Stardust tour through the United Kingdom, Japan, and North America.
What do you mean, character? Are you talking about the person that goes in front of the camera? The person who's on stage in front of the band?
These things started that way, and then they became where that... Like, he just kind of... Ziggy Stardust and David Bowie became...
So, quote David Bowie, unquote, was he would four speak, people?
He would speak as these characters. Oh, yeah, wow. Like, that's not David Bowie saying that. That's Ziggy Stardust saying that.
That is cool.
So, what ended up happening in the album is this guy comes from another planet and becomes Ziggy. So popular. You're right. Becomes so popular with this band that the fans eventually overtake him and kill him, and that's the end of the album.
But Ziggy just played guitar, man.
That's kind of the thing. Like, it's a pretty dark overtone. But the theme here is kind of the characters of David Bowie throughout the 70s, and that Ziggy Stardust is one that's really well known, or at least when you say Ziggy Stardust, a popular picture could come to mind. Like, everybody has that idea in their mind of the androgynous rock star.
There's very few other iconic David Bowie songs. Yeah.
It's funny.
I think if you ask, like, the hipster kind of confused guy who's like, oh, what's your favorite David Bowie song? He might pick Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would say Fame.
Fame. Fame. What about Queen Bitch? Because I like Iggy Pop.
You know what? Some of the stuff that we're going to talk about might be some of my favorite stuff. But so they ended up putting
out... It might be some of your favorite stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So they ended up putting out a concert film with the same name. Never ended up touring Europe. And in a couple of interviews, he's just like, what the fuck was my manager doing? Like, I could have made...
He never
toured Europe as Ziggy Stardust.
Oh, okay.
It was just, it would have been like, I mean, he basically cut his revenue in half. Like, right. He was just like, how can my manager...
That's like Mick Jagger saying, you know what, guys? Yeah. We're only playing Canada.
Yeah. And okay. Just like, no, we're out. Or, I mean, just playing America.
Or Jimi Hendrix saying, oh, you know what, we're only playing America.
Right. So it had a big impact on culture.
Who is American?
Right.
Never mind.
Ziggy Stardust had a big impact on culture, really changed music. He was kind of, became Bowie himself. Bowie eventually decided that was all too much. So if you want to escape a character
that
you
created...
It
was too much to be himself?
Right.
Okay.
What do you do?
Lead a rock band.
Kind of, but you got to get out of town. Where do you go in the mid-70s?
L.A.
That's a good answer. 1975, Bowie decides to pick up and move to Los Angeles.
There we go. All right. Gold star for today.
He decides he's going to be a movie star. It's in a total reinvention. He's going to get a little time away from his wife. Okay. Also, things aren't going too well there.
How long was he married?
He was married twice. Once throughout the 70s, and seemed to like get along okay with her, but was never like real faithful, like we'll talk about.
Okay.
But, well, and then he was married from 1990 until he passed away to his second wife.
Okay.
So he had two marriages, and like they both lasted a...
That always upset me, like when rock stars hit it big when they left their first wife. That always pissed me off much.
I always have that thing about John Lennon. It's a... John Lennon was kind of a prick.
Like, yeah, you are a fucking prick. Yeah. Like, you're so full of your own ego.
Like, I mean, you know, like, everybody has their own stuff in their own life, but my gosh, yeah, he seems like a dick. So, Bowie decides to go and film this film called The Man Who Fell to Earth.
And no way!
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yes, sir.
That was David Bowie?
He goes out to New Mexico, decides he's going to become a movie star out there, but again, the role becomes... all-consuming. And obviously, during this time, a recurring
theme here. So he's a method actor.
He's a method actor and a cocaine human being. during this time, the recurring theme here is going to be the copious, mind-boggling amounts. And we're talking, like, people in these interviews that have done tons of cocaine themselves saying, I've never seen anybody like David Bowie. He did tons of cocaine. So he took in, taking in a lot throughout the 70s. If you know anything about cocaine in the 1970s, it's a pretty pure, stout product, especially honestly, if you had the money to get it.
You know, that's quite contradictory to what the popular belief is. The popular belief is that, just like marijuana, it was much poorer quality in the 70s. But, hey...
Probably by... Well, I don't know, man.
Like, if you did have the money, if David Bowie wanted pure cocaine, I'm sure he got pure cocaine.
I think it kind of probably cut off in the early 70s? Like, in the 60s, you could get medicinal cocaine.
Well, I
don't think that lasted that long.
They used to put it in Coca-Cola.
Yeah, they still do. They put this like the vapors.
When it started hitting Wall Street in like 80s, that's when if somebody paid $1,000 a gram, they got it.
Right.
But in the 70s, I don't believe for a minute that it was any good. Just like today.
Well, he was probably getting really good stuff, but probably paying $1,000
a gram. Yeah, he probably was.
So point being, he's very deep in the cocaine game. That combined with his deep delving into the character for The Man Who Fell to Earth, he kind of came up with this amalgamation character from the character from the movie and how he was feeling in his real life and some of the really dark influences that hadn't been able to come to life in any of his other personas. So he came up with this character, which was both a character in a novel, which was part novel, try to follow me here, part novel autobiography, also planned on writing the script and for a movie, and also a soundtrack for the movie. This was called The Thin White Duke.
Thin White Duke.
The Thin White Duke. And it was called, he came up with this concept.
It's really complicated.
Right. I mean, a lot of the stuff that he came up with was very, like, Sherlock Holmes cocaine fiend stuff.
Why couldn't he just sing?
I think, you know what? That's an interesting point. He, in the time period just before this and just after this, the 74 interviews you'll find with, like, Dick Cavett and the 77 interviews that I found.
Match Game, 77?
Who was it? He was listening to, or he was talking with a group of journalists now that I can't remember, but the interview is on YouTube. You can post it in the links. But he is basically dissuading all of the grandiose talk about his career. He's saying, no, I'm just a guy that makes music. And he, like, says it really earnestly. Like, I gotta hand it to him. He doesn't sound like it's not a flippant comment.
Did he,
like,
fool everybody in the entire world with his characters?
I think...
Or did he fool himself?
I'll tell you the reason that I chose to talk about this character in depth in particular is because I think this is...
Ziggy Stardust.
Admittedly, no, this is the Thin White Duke.
Thin White Duke.
This is admittedly his darkest time in his life. And this is probably the character that brought him closest to death.
What does Thin White Duke mean?
I don't know. There's no, like, it's just an nom de plume kind of. Like
nom de plume. Yeah, oui.
It was something, a character that... Well,
so it doesn't mean like a little thin line? It doesn't mean a skinny white dude?
That's what it means. He is the thin white dude.
Okay, all right.
And he's this really dark... dark as far as... he is obsessed with fascism and Aryan supremacy and violence.
David Bowie.
No. The thin white dude.
Thin white dude.
Yeah.
His persona at that time,
he
was an Aryan supremacist.
He has so many... This is going to be a tough one to wrap your mind around. He has so many interviews where he's talking about... Not a ton, I guess, compared to the time. But this is a two-year period in which he's got several interviews.
From years what to what?
74, 76.
Okay.
75, I believe, is when the album itself came out, called Station to Station. But he's talking about...
That sounds like...
Yeah, we'll get into that. But he talks about being... fascinated with different aspects of Aryan supremacy and Hitler and how fascism is like the best thing in the world. And he actually is photographed leaving an airport in England. I forget what airport, but he's given the
Heil. Didn't he used to salute his fans at that time with the Heil Hitler salute.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to wrap your mind around, because
by the way, we do not agree with this.
Absolutely not.
At all.
No, it's just that's kind of the point, is it's tough to wrap your mind around a time when a guy could do this and say, "No,
I'm fucking thin white Duke. I can do whatever I want."
I'm not David Bowie.
No.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with David Bowie.
IRS audit me. I'm not even the same person.
You probably did file separate taxes. So he goes back to LA from New Mexico, and he's just totally obsessed with being the thin white Duke now. So,
from New Mexico.
Yeah, so he goes back to his house.
What was he doing down there?
In L.A.?
In New Mexico.
Filming the thin white Duke.
Okay, I gotcha.
Filming the movie called The Man Fell to Earth. He gets down to L.A. and just does nothing but go out to see shows, hook up with as many girls as he can. He literally says his wife... does an interview where she says, you know what?
His first wife
does an interview where, because she was married to him for another 4 or 5 years after this. And she knows he was with other girls, but she said it didn't bother her because it was just one night stands. And David Bowie is known to love black women.
Okay.
And this is his quote
again. But David Bowie, the person.
This is David Bowie. Okay. Very confusing. Very, very, very confusing.
I'm already trying to...
Aryan supremacy face. He goes to L.A., and just wants to hook up with every black woman in town, and says, this is his quote about the time period after. How was I to know there was going to be so many black chicks in L.A.? Which is just like, this guy just says whatever he wants. And it's just so counterintuitive to be like, I invented this Aryan supremacist character who is going to go to the city of Los Angeles and try to hook up with as many black women as he possibly can.
I mean,
he had to have been switching out between them and David Bowie. I don't even know how that works.
Like he goes home to his wife, and he's Davy Jones.
He's David Bowie. He's David Bowie when he's with his wife. His wife even eventually ends up coming out to LA, and they go.
They weren't even living together.
She stays back in England for a while.
Holy shit!
Then she comes out. They get deep into black magic and Aleister Crowley. And heavy cocaine. Not his
that's
wife.
That's that cool guy that Ozzy keeps talking about.
Aleister Crowley, if you ever want to hear, I mean, there's tons of good podcasts.
Podcast
on the Left is a good podcast.
Yeah.
Very influential and creepy guy. And
he's a magician, per se. Yeah,
he is a hard guy to pin down exactly what he is. He is a hedonist. I guess a nihilist, a Satanist, he even has a story about seeing the devil coming up out of his pool. Ex-wife will corroborate that, and she says that she was sober when they saw this black mass come out of the pool. I actually, funny story, I'm watching a video about David Bowie seeing the devil for this episode, right? this guy hosting the video writes his own song about it and plays like the first 5 minutes of the video is his song. And, and it was, he called it Beelzebubbles were coming up out of his pool.
And then it's the newest, it's the newest hippest slip and slide from Whammo. Beelzebubbles.
He showed like a computer generated pool, right? And then there was this black mass coming out of it, and he like, this is just in a, this is just an artist rendering of what it would look like. Yeah, I fucking know. It's not an actual video.
You don't
have
to label it. You don't have to label it artist rendering. This is not 48 hours. This is not A&E Network. Good God.
So, despite demons and cocaine, all David Bowie needed to exist.
What else is there?
Milk and peppers.
There you go.
If you got those two, you're good.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay.
All
right.
All he did, all he lived on, was cocaine, milk, and peppers.
It's gluten free.
It's gluten free. It's not paleo.
No,
it's not paleo. No,
it could be vegan.
It's not vegan. It's vegetarian.
Milk. Oh yeah, it's vegetarian. It's
vegetarian.
Yeah,
I'm sure it wasn't grass fed milk back then either.
But I mean, what is milk without hormones? It's not the same.
It's, yeah, if you don't pasteurize it, like, I mean, fucking hey, you gotta pasteurize it.
Louis Pasteur was on the right track when he came up with this process.
Two things we know here, music history, pasteurization.
Absolutely.
So Bowie says he got his weight down, or I guess his, we didn't get his weight down on purpose. It wasn't a magical cocaine, peppers, and milk diet. Bowie's weight sunk down to 95 pounds.
For a 6-foot-tall guy?
He is like that. That is.
Is he that tall?
I don't think he's 6 foot tall. Maybe he's a pretty 5'10"? Small guy. But he's
really?
Probably 5'6", 5'7".
Are you serious?
He's not a very big guy.
He portrays himself so much
larger.
You
ever seen the Dancing in the Streets video with he's standing next to Mick Jagger? He's not that much
How tall is Mick Jagger?
Mick Jagger's a tiny man.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's like 5'5".
What the fuck?
Did you think Mick Jagger was a giant?
I thought both of these guys were just massive.
Do you think they just dissuaded their career in the WWE? Like, no, actually, I think I'm going to try this rock and roll thing.
I've been lied to my whole life.
I could have played in the NBA, but...
So you're telling me they're not 7 feet tall?
No, regrettably.
Oh, man.
I no longer trust your estimates on anyone's size.
Well, I mean, does that mean that, like, a 6-foot rock star could be like twice as powerful as David Bowie?
I feel like you just need everyone in every picture you've ever seen to like hold a ruler.
No,
or else
they
you'll
just
have no idea.
They need to. They need to be in a convenience store, like ordering a slushie, pulling a slushie,
standing next to a life-size T-Rex, for you to understand. Oh, that's a pretty small person. Okay.
Because I judge people by I quantify height. By the percentage of a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
He's about a third of a T-Rex.
A third? So that is a good 10 feet tall. All right.
I even think you're off on the estimates of a T-Rex size. You think he's 30 feet tall?
30 feet tall about a T-Rex? Yeah.
That's a giant T-Rex.
Is that right? Well, how big do you think a T-Rex is?
I think this is entirely another podcast, which I'm willing to get into.
I will. But what music would Tyrannosaurus Rex listen to?
T-Rex.
Oh my God.
Duh.
I feel like such an idiot.
I was like, is he really going to ask this? Obvious, the answer is so obvious.
But back at the farm.
Back at the farm, the thin like Duke is holding things down. He has got a chicken coop full of cocaine. he goes on Dick Cavett. We just watched this interview before we started.
Them damn milk boys,
like,
milk and pepper boys.
David, there hasn't been chickens here in years. What happened? Well, are you sure?
Are you sure?
We took a break and watched the Dick Cavett interview with David Bowie, where he talks about a variety of things. That's where he explains that he's a collector of personalities.
First of all, Dick Cavett cannot be portrayed as the sober one.
Oh, I think he was stone cold sober.
Really? He was not drinking?
No. I mean, like we said, he might have been that guy that like sipped on whiskey, but he never got drunk.
Like Sinatra.
You can't sit that leisurely
when
you're that drunk.
He was it looked like he was the chair.
He's the most relaxed man in America. That's why they have him. Very well
could be
the most hyped up man in England.
David Bowie. What did we say? He's literally a human piston. He had a cane full of coke. He had a cocaine.
You know those like exercise vibration things that they like shake put weight, you on, like where or, like, no, it's like a plate. You stand on it, and your whole body shakes.
Yeah.
That's what he looks like. He's got one like of those
back in the 50s or 60s when they when they put the belt around your waist and it vibrates.
He literally doesn't stop moving.
He does not stop moving for this entire 20-minute interview.
Yeah, it's like 15, 20 minutes.
They take a break because his nose is bleeding.
It's 15 to 20 minutes. Good point. He just never stops moving. It's exhausting to
he
watch.
He must be so tired by the end of the day. The hardest working man in show business is not James Brown. It's
David
the Thin
Bowie.
White Duke.
There's a part where Iggy Pop comes into this story and he talks about touring, David Bowie taking him on tour during this time. And even at this time, maybe especially during this time, he talks about his work ethic where he's just like, man, he would wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning and he would drive
David Bowie would.
All day, right, all day to the next show and just studying during the drive, just listening to albums. He said he was so far ahead of his time. He was like, he knew who like Kraftwerk was in the mid-70s. Like he knew all these bands way before anybody else had heard of them.
Okay.
Who else did he point out? Several of these big bands where he was like, David Bowie knew about these guys way before anybody else did.
Well, I don't doubt the fact that he had a line into the main vein.
And his work ethic was extraordinary. And I think that personality type is susceptible to falling in. The cocaine.
Do you think it was an addictive personality? People say that all the time.
It was a way to he was working during this whole time.
Okay.
So it was a way to feed that incessant creative process.
So he wasn't just touring, he was working.
Right.
And then singing his songs at night.
With that kind of physical decay, it just became like took once
you
get down to
95
pounds. So he was born in 1947, and he was just shy of 30.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he was his late 20s.
Dude, that's my
fucking he
would have
turned
age.
30 in 1977.
I'm 28.
So he'd be 28, too.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah, a 95-pound 28-year-old. What the fuck is happening?
Dude, if I was 90... Oh, my God.
So he takes on this Thin White Duke
persona. I like Whataburger too much.
Oh, yeah. Just, I don't think David Bowie ever had a Whataburger.
What the fuck? These Brits are missing out.
Sad. Oh, that's the thing we were going
to
talk about.
Instead of German immigrants to Texas, we should have British immigrants to Texas.
We're going to get into some dangerous ground there.
Oh, either that or we're going to get some better beer.
Oh, jeez. So, one thing we wanted to talk about on that interview is he talks about black noise.
Yeah.
Which is something that...
I heard of white noise and pink noise.
Yeah.
And
the brown noise.
Brown noise, yeah.
But never heard of the black noise.
He
describes it.
He was, like, terrified.
He
had the same emotion on his face as when he spoke of his mother.
Right. He was kind of, like, detached.
Yeah.
But kind of, like... worried about it. Like, it was a real thing in his mind.
It was scaring him.
Yeah, it was
for
really
sure.
scaring
yeah.
him. But he talked about this thing called black noise that was...
He
talked about it so ambiguously. What was it? Like, he said it could take down a city.
He said it was a weaponized form of sound.
Right.
I'm thinking, what if it was, like, the noise that he associated with his mother being in the womb, the sound that he heard, like, the whooshing running water noise.
I thought it was just, like, him talking about, like... the frequency that would break a glass, that's...
I think that's all horse shit.
Oh, that's like a metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's kind of hit me. Don't judge me until
don't
you listen
me.
To what he says.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
if you can decipher what David Bowie's talking
what
about...
What is this interview called? Let's quote this right now.
Yeah, this is the 1973 Dick Cavett interview. It's on YouTube. It's 15 minutes long. We'll link to it in the description. He is not yet the Thin White Duke in this episode. He has just put Ziggy Stardust to rest. And he's kind of contemplating and building the Thin White Duke persona. But you can see a man on the brink about to slip into madness, kind of.
80% cocaine power?
Oh, at least. And that's
yeah.
not an exaggeration. Like this
80%.
This is like deep,
yeah.
deep in the game. But to show how much you know creativity he kept up during this time, in September of 1975, he goes into the studio. He booked the state-of-the-art Cherokee Studios on Fairfax and Melrose in L.A. and made station to station.
I know
station.
This chick who lives down on Melrose.
Oh, yeah. She's never satisfied without some
pain. Yeah, that's funny.
Good Guns N' Roses song. Yeah, so he goes down to record. That's on Cherokee Studios. He makes this album called Station to Station. It's the name came from when he was traveling on the Trans-Siberian Express. And
in Russia?
In Russia. And he got sick of just going station to station and there not being anywhere. He said he just wanted to go home and watch television. And he's like, this place sucks.
Sounds like L. Ron Hubbard.
I mean, I think they would have gotten along recently. Yeah.
Would Jagger and L. Ron gotten along?
Huh.
Jagger seems like the intellectual type.
I don't think
Jagger... He's smart enough to live to fucking 95.
He wouldn't buy into
L. Ron's bullshit. He wouldn't put up with that bullshit. No, no way.
No. Bowie and Jagger were quite good friends. Made possibly the gayest music video of all time.
Possibly.
Which isn't... I'm not possibly, using that in the pejorative sense.
Possibly it's the gayest friends
of all possibly, time. Possibly, but not... Not an insult. It's like no, literally it's what happened. Yeah,
it is fun.
So he records Station to Station, which I gotta say, from watching, we can't like play a whole lot of it on the podcast.
No, we're limited to a number of seconds,
snippets here and there.
Check it out.
I really impressed. It's a really heavy kind of album, but the guitar tones that he's working with,
did he have a consistent band? Throughout his career,
these
guitar tones that you're talking about, did they come from one guy who was with David Bowie the whole time?
I spent so much time digging into the Thin White Duke persona of it that I don't
know. We'll get into that next time, maybe.
Specifics. I will say that like this took me from a cursory Bowie fan somewhere.
But by the way, we need to mention that it is just you doing the research,
right? So it's a. It's a big load
for this episode. The entire week and a half you've been doing research on
deep in David Bowie game. So yeah, I'm starting to believe in Black Noise.
Yep,
just a little bit.
Have you tried breaking a glass?
I've just been the last 6 hours. I've been staring at a wine glass in my room,
yelling at it.
So, no, you can't yell. You just gotta stare. But he gets this. Yeah, he got the idea for Station to Station for going. You know, station to station.
There's got to be so many better railways, though.
It's because he didn't fly.
Trans-Siberian Railway seems so, like...
I'd just take my chances flying. Maybe a Russian airline doesn't look all that
appealing. Why didn't he like flying, though?
He just never did. Like, he
okay. That was in that interview, too.
Right. Planes, trains, automobiles...
Planes, trains, and automobiles?
Boats, he said a ship, and I was like, really? You'd rather take a ship? You shouldn't have to take a ship to his tour.
Although
he went on the iSolar tour, which was like a really avant-garde kind of very stark black and white visual tour, where it opened with this black and white movie of a razor blade cutting into an eyeball. It's from the 1928 film
That's funny because my eyeball just started twitching.
There you go.
Literally, as you were it began speaking about this,
it's that fucking Aleister Crowley.
It really is, man.
The visual element of the performances incorporated banks of big fluorescent white lights set against black backdrops. So it's all black and white. The Thin White Duke is black trousers, a white shirt, black vest.
Okay, all right. I gotcha.
It's kind of like a really thin European Waylon Jennings.
Oh, man, that's too much for me to process.
It's just like white shirt, black vest, black pants.
Okay. Dilbert.
Oh, wow. It's not too far off from a Dilbert.
Okay.
Dilbert look. Okay, yeah. Without the tie.
Took
Dilbert's tie off and made him an Aryan supremacist. And had him lose a ton of weight. That would be the Thin White Duke.
All right, then. There we go. It's settled. And thank you for coming to this episode of Alton.
If you've ever wondered how Dilbert would take his career to the next level. So it became a pretty successful tour, but halfway through, you can see some of the bootlegs from it. Some of them, it's such a hot and cold thing, which is really...
What year are we talking about?
75, 76.
A bootleg from 76 is unintelligible.
No, some of them are okay with soundboard recording.
Okay.
Yeah, so
some you're talking about audio or video?
But you can, I mean, you'll mostly audio, but okay. They'll sync it with the video here and there. I think the ones that I saw that I was really impressed with was the Vancouver, BC rehearsals for this tour.
Oh, wow.
They have a really cool video that they've synced up with it. It's not the actual video.
Okay. So it's kind of like what they do with AC/DC now, is they have old audio tracks to right, new video. No,
but this is just like the sound from the rehearsal, but they do you can tell his voice is kind of in and out, the cocaine is starting to wear on him.
Well, yeah.
The physical effect is the only thing though, because other than that the band's super sharp, the material's awesome. Even his energy is really up. He's kicking, he's a great showman, but
he is kicking, huh?
Man, sometimes the vocals get a little worn. Other than that,
good. Think about singing for a few hours
every night,
night,
and he's doing like he's constantly recording. He really was a workaholic,
right?
Like all coke jokes
I was not joking about hardest working man in show business.
I mean, yeah. it really was impressive this is a guy that didn't just do, he's writing books and soundtracks and albums and movies, and he wants to be a movie star, and like. I think
he is a movie star.
Right,
he is an author. He is writing soundtrack. Yeah,
he really did kind of successfully go on to advance those careers, and like it's the amount of energy and work that takes is staggering.
It's exhausting.
It's hard having a podcast. I can't imagine just going out.
But you don't do any uppers, so.
I'm telling you, if you're on the Patreon,
do not survive Brandon's drug habit.
But I'll tell you what, though.
Non-existent drug habit.
As debauched as he was, so that material just blew me away. I was expecting it to be... subpar.
The greatest work that you've ever seen come out of a vocalist of all time.
Right.
It's incredible to me that this guy doesn't play any instruments.
He plays some guitar, but
not live.
No, not live. No, just him out there.
Which is, I can relate this to fucking Axl Rose.
Yeah, definitely.
Where Axl is. Guns N' Roses.
If I had to equate him to anybody modern, I would say Scott Weiland is probably the most influenced by David Bowie. Just
cool.
Kind of that really fashion conscious. Because David Bowie doesn't run around. He doesn't move that much. He's just an eye magnet because of what he's got. You
everything.
Have it
he's got it.
Right. He has
but
it.
But the point is, people go to see David Bowie. People go to see Axl Rose.
Right.
People might go to see Slash or Izzy. All right, so that's a poor example. But people are not going to see David Bowie's band.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't go to see David Bowie's band, but having watched these videos, I'm definitely blown away by how good his band is.
I got to check some of this out later.
This is
after the episode.
This has been a big eye-opener into just for a short slice of his life. This is only like, a 7-8 year time period that I examined, and all the stuff that he did, even at the worst of his personal life, it was just amazing work. And I mean, I think this is like precursor to his really groundbreaking stuff. He finally did realize that he had hit bottom when he started. He had a buddy in LA, Iggy Pop, who decided...
Never heard of him.
He was having a breakdown.
Never heard of him.
He's a pretty famous dude. He's having a breakdown and decided to check himself into an LA psych hospital, which is a famous story in and of itself. But David Bowie goes and starts visiting him, decides, maybe I've got a little problem myself, decides to retire the Thin White Duke. He decides that he's had enough of Hollywood entirely. So by February...
Iggy or Bowie?
Bowie and Iggy both had. So by February...
Iggy moved to Florida. Like an old bastard.
Well, now he has. But so February, Ziggy packs up his home in Bel Air. I mean, Ziggy. David Bowie packs up his home in Bel Air.
Philadelphia, born and raised.
he'd already, so Bowie had messed up doing all the projects that he started. He was late on the soundtrack deadline for The Man Who Fell to Earth. It actually ended up going to this Japanese guy, Tomo Yamashita, who is like apparently highly regarded and did an excellent job.
Was he a director?
No, a soundtrack guy.
Okay.
So other than that, he was out on the road after he left L.A. and then off to Europe, and he never lived in Los Angeles again. Instead, he and Iggy Pop decided to move to West Berlin in the mid-1976.
That's way out there, man. That was not even close to the Trans-Siberian Railway.
Well, they wanted to get as far away from L.A. and notoriety as he could, and
it's pretty much the opposite side of the world.
He said he could go and be an artist there, and nobody even knew who he was, and if they did, they didn't care. So he was free to kind of start.
That's like David Hasselhoff in America.
Yeah, because everyone's going to know who he is in Berlin. That's damn sure.
Well, I guess if you put him next to Pamela Anderson, you might know who he is here.
No, David Hasselhoff's way bigger than Pamela Anderson in Germany. That's
the Hoff. But in America, yeah. Pamela Anderson, yeah. The Hoff is king over there.
He's the man. He rules it. So,
episode for another time.
After this, the Berlin trilogy came about. He started working with Brian Eno in Berlin.
Wait a minute. The Brian Eno?
The Brian Eno. That's the guy. They came out with Low in 1977, Heroes in 1977 again, and Lodger in 1979.
Three
albums in 2 years. The albums were recorded after Bowie took up a residence in West Berlin in late 1976. They saw him experiment with all kinds of different elements of music, electronic, krautrock, ambient, and world music. They developed these things that we'll talk about we're going to give them their own treatment to the oblique strategies, where they came up with these cards that would tell you to like switch instruments or play something backwards. These really creative ideas.
It was a motivational deck of cards.
Just like something that these guys were really...
That was super, super generic. Yeah. But it would apply to your situation if you were having trouble.
It's like such a simple and genius. These guys really thought about music in a
oblique
different
strategies.
Term. Yeah. Yeah, Google it, check it out. It is it's a good way to solve
David
problems.
Bowie was the co-founder of oblique strategies.
Yeah, Brian Eno came up with them, but they
I had no idea.
Yeah, they implemented them on the Berlin. Those are like the first albums they were implemented on.
That might be one of the coolest things I've heard all week.
And I just always have thought that is just like such a testament. That is like, you ever hear the story of Ted Williams, the famous baseball player? He's the only player to have a career average of 300. He's the best hitter of all time in just about any knowledgeable person's
opinion. Did he not play for Boston?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So he's probably the most famous Boston player of all time.
Babe Ruth.
No, Ted Williams is more revered in Boston than Babe Ruth, though.
Yeah, but...
Babe Ruth ate hot dogs.
The most famous...
Babe Ruth fucking ate hot dogs and beer, and Ted Williams flew... fighter jets in Korea.
What a badass, man.
He flew in World War
Who's
I
the guy
and
that
Korea.
They
World
War II and Korea. Ray Boggs?
I don't know. We'll get into it.
I don't know. I'm not a baseball. I'm a guitarist, man.
Ted Williams had
a
way of looking at things that was totally different. He would take his bats. He was so obsessed with it, he would take his bats to the post office and weigh them on the postal scales there.
Wow, that's official.
He looked at things
that
entirely
is
differently.
Official. And that's he was a game player.
That's kind of how Bowie looked at music. He was just looked at things.
That's how Axl looks at music.
I think just true, that's what makes geniuses. Like someone that's just going to see the world in a
All this
way.
Bad shit that we're saying about David Bowie. He might be one of the greatest.
It's all in jest. And this is all stuff. We haven't said anything that he hasn't said about himself in these interviews.
Okay. But all these characters that he's portrayed.
Right.
He may be one of the greatest minds in musical history.
He seems incredibly talented. And I know I would even say, and this is, like I said, coming from a cursory Bowie fan who always really respected him, I am so blown away by the man's talent now, having dug into just this little slice of his life, that I think he is not just music, I would say in entertainment.
Entertainment.
Because like he was in the movies, he was in music, he wrote books, he came up with all these characters that he lived out, and like other than Little Richard, Who was
Little Richard?
Who was sexually androgynous in rock and roll? I mean, he kind of brought this. He reinvented that concept and brought that to fit his own thing. And I really think he was wired differently.
Okay.
I think he.
You think he was an alien?
No. But I think he was, and I don't mean mentally ill or mentally defective. No, I don't think he had anything to do with that. I know people say that, but like,
okay.
I think he was just. I know I texted you that he was an alien because he was so talented.
Okay.
But I think he was just kind of. He was here to do that. I think he was super good at what he
that
did.
That was David Bowie.
That's what he was built to do. Now, sadly, like we said, on January 10th, 2 days after the release of his album, Dark Star, David Bowie.
Granted, an okay album.
Yeah,
for a washed up rock star.
You're gonna rip his album in the last like.
I am. Well, this is all facts here. Okay. There were two or three songs that I enjoyed, which is more than normal.
I haven't listened to that entire album yet, so I'll have to pass judgment on that. But David Bowie passed away on January 10th, 2016, 2 days after his birthday, and the release of his last album from liver cancer in his New York City apartment.
Bowie's legacy. You think he got that from drinking or?
I don't think he drank as much as he did cocaine.
I think it was just happenstance. Oh, okay.
Could have been genetic.
That would have been kidneys, huh?
Bowie's legacy is far too large to be covered in one episode. He'll be getting his full bio treatment.
Just like Jimmy Page?
All these guys are coming up.
Led Zeppelin? And...
They'll be coming up here on All Damn Night. However, for now, we hope you've enjoyed this tale of what Bowie called the darkest and most dangerous time of his life. The character who drove him to the very brink. The Thin White Duke.
The Thin White Duke. There you go.
So thanks again for tuning in to this episode of All Damn Night. Be sure and check us out. We're all over social media building that whole audience. We are on Twitter at twitter.com/alldamnnight. We are on Instagram at instagram.com/alldamnnightpodcast. If you have any show ideas, suggestions, questions, anything like that, we'll be taking some questions on the show here in the coming weeks.
We will respond.
Absolutely. Email us at alldamnnightpodcast@gmail.com. We are getting a website and Patreon set up here in the next week or two, and we'll be rolling with that.
Maybe a new platform, entertainment, yeah.
Big things
YouTube
coming up,
yeah?
Yes, sure. We will also be, we're going to try out a post-YouTube show that's in the works. So we're going to get a YouTube presence going, so be looking for us on YouTube soon. And big things coming up. Other than that, thanks for tuning in, and we will see you again next week on All Damn Night.